With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
Good morning and welcome back to Counterculture here on Reality Check Radio with Marie. And joining me now all the way from South Australia is Nicola Sentafenti. She is a member of the Legislative Council. Gosh, that's a mouthful to get out, isn't it? Of South Australia. Nicola, how are you?
Well, thanks, Marie. Thanks so much for having me on your program and welcome from Australia.
Yeah, so good to have you. And it's actually nice to change it up and talk to some Australian politicians from across the ditch. I've got you on for a really good reason. Ellie Marie Diamond hooked us up. She is, honestly, I have to pay this woman something. She's so amazing, and she is phenomenal, and she has the most interesting people for me to talk to. And she said, you've got to talk to Nicola. And you have introduced a bill into the House in South Australia. There is some really interesting history there. So tell us about the bill and tell us about the background of why it is you pulled this bill together and you wanted to actually introduce it into your house.
Absolutely, Marie. But before I do, can I just echo your words and sentiments in regards to Ali? She is one of the most bravest women that I know. And, you know, she's been a true inspiration to me throughout this journey. And, I think she's got an inner beauty that just shines so absolutely brightly. And, you know, she is so passionate about making sure that, you know, the stories, the real stories about what women go through in the sex trade, in the prostitution industry, are loud and are heard. And so, shout out. Couldn't agree more. That,
well, she has the art of cutting through the euphemism and the bullshit, basically.
She really does, doesn't she? Absolutely. Yeah. But just being so gentle and doing so as well, so really brings you along with that journey. So Marie, my journey, you know, basically started when I came into Parliament, which was in 2020, believe it or not, right in the middle of COVID. I was the new member of the Legislative Council, and which is the upper house here in South Australia. And when you're a new member, particularly in the upper house, because we have lots of committees that go on in the upper house, and when you're the new member, you know, you kind of get given the Guernsey of here's all the committees. And so I think at, you know, one stage throughout 2020, I think I was on about 12 committees. Ooh. But one of those committees that I sat on was actually a select committee that was looking into a bill that had been introduced into our parliament by one of the Greens members of parliament, Tammy Franks, who was basically, the bill was about decriminalisation of prostitution here in South Australia. And so currently, prostitution, is criminalised for want of a better. I mean, it's got its nuances, but essentially, it is criminalised. You can't have street walking, etc. And so Tammy Franks had put forward a bill to decriminalise the industry, and I was one of the members that was sitting on the committee. And so, obviously, we heard from the Sex Industry Network, who'd come in. They looked like they were, to me, very kind of university educated women who were obviously in favour of the bill, sort of saying, you know, it's my body, my choice. But yet we also heard stories from women like Hallie and a lot of other women as well who, you know, were really saying, look, this is a horrible industry for women, and you know, no woman really chooses to be in this industry. And these women were saying, look, I didn't choose to be in this industry. I got there because of circumstances, you know, and sometimes it was because of poverty, and sometimes it was because of drug and alcohol abuse, sometimes it was because of childhood abuse or domestic violence. But essentially, you know, they were saying to us, and it really resonated with me, look, this wasn't a choice for us. And it took us so long to get out because, you know, there just wasn't any supports there. And they were saying, you know, for you to decriminalise it, basically you're legitimising that, you're legitimising the violence, you're legitimising the inequality. And, you know, as survivors, we can't understand that. And that really resonated with me. And, you know, they started talking about this thing called the Nordic model. And I didn't really know much about the Nordic model at that point in time, although I had heard a few things about it. But they were talking about the Nordic model, the equality model, and how that was the model that they felt, you know, would really help women to exit the industry. And so fortunately, that piece of legislation didn't get through the parliament. I think it's, you know, decriminalisation of prostitution has been put in front of our parliament over, I mean, we're looking into the double digits now. I think it might even be up to 14 times that that side of politics has tried to put decriminalisation of prostitution through our parliament. And I'm grateful that it hasn't succeeded so far. But my concern is, Marie, is that unless we put in an alternate model, a better model, a far better model, that we will see what happens time and time again in our parliamentary system is that, you know, over time, members of parliament just get worn down and they kind of go, well, you know, oh, we don't really like this model, but they keep bringing it back in and it's better than what we've got, so we'll just vote for it. That's my real concern, and that's what I think drove me to go, you know what, I'm going to do some research, because listening to these women really made me understand that, you know, that the sex industry for the vast majority of people is not a choice. It is an awful industry, and it's an industry that, you know, promotes inequality, it promotes domestic violence, it promotes all of the things that generally otherwise in society we're trying to get rid of. So to me, that really, I didn't understand why anyone would support a decriminalisation model if we were really, truly as a society wanting to create equality for women and wanting to reduce things like domestic violence into the future. So I did some research and I spoke to a lot of different groups. I decided that, so last year I introduced my bill, and my official title of my bill is the Summary Offences Prostitution Law Reform Amendment Bill. And I guess my bill really achieves three main things. It obviously, firstly, decriminalises the selling of sex, so that prostituted people who, you know, as you and I know, are mostly women and also girls, will not suffer any criminal penalties under my bill. You know, the aim is to really reduce the stigma that, you know, these women experience and these girls experience and makes them more likely to reach out for help. The second aspect of my bill is obviously criminalising the buyer and the third party profiteering from the sale of sex. So we know that, you know, the majority of buyers are men so it really heavily targets those men. It targets pimps and it targets brothel owners. We know in this trade that it's all about supply and demand. And so for me, I think the most important thing in trying to really reduce prostitution is to target demand. You know, any market is supply and demand. And so if you can get rid of that demand and target that demand, then you know, the rule of market should be that we should see a reduction in supply. I think thirdly, and the most importantly, is to really create safe exit strategies for these women, for these people that want to leave the industry. And I think, you know, genuine support really has to be part of this, and it's got to be provided in the forms of whether or not it's accommodation, whether or not it's employment, or, you know, accesses to services, particularly like drug and alcohol rehabilitation, because we know that a lot of these women that get into the industry is because they have a substance, an addiction to a substance. So it is, you know, my bill is based on the equality model or the Nordic model, and you know, I think I like to refer to it as the equality model, because I think up to this time there's been inequality in prostitution. That is the definition of inequality, is prostitution. You know, men have been allowed to abuse women without penalty, and And I'm hoping that this bill will correct that.
Now, there was I understand there was a debate at the end of last year. Did it come up for debate in the House? Is that correct?
So it hasn't come up yet.
Oh, it hasn't come up yet.
No, I've introduced it. I've spoken to it. There's been, so Marie, at the moment in the upper house, we have 22 members of parliament. And at the moment, I'm one vote away of getting it through that house. So unfortunately, politics is a numbers game, always has been, always will be. And I was set to bring it up for a debate at the end of last year, but I knew that if I took it to a debate then, that I'd lose by one vote, and I'm not prepared to do that at this stage. So I'm continuing to work hard with those members of parliament who you know haven't indicated their support, to see if I can change just that one vote to allow it to get through.
Are you able to do this on a conscience level as opposed to a partisan level? Because this is sort of one of those topics that I think you would be able to get members to cross the house on, I would have thought.
Yep. So it will be a conscience vote for both of the major parties. We will see. So there are a number of, I'm in the Liberal Party, there are a number of my colleagues, quite a large number of my colleagues supporting my bill, but there are a number of Labor colleagues as well, and there are a number of crossbench. We have, you know, some sort of minor parties, independent parties as well. So, for me, it's really about, I'm not willing to lose this fight. I don't think this is a fight that's lost yet, but there's a bit more work to do in the background, because, you know, what we see in the chamber is one thing, but there's lots of conversations to be had outside of the chamber to try and get these members of parliament to really understand the model, because a lot of them don't. No, it's not that they don't understand the model, but it's that, you know, there's been a lot of misinformation, I think, that's been put out there about this particular model. So I'm just trying to educate those members of parliament, you know, about particularly, you know, given the fact that we have seen this model work well in other countries, you know, countries like Sweden, countries like France. We know it works well there. We know that it doesn't go underground, or there's, you know, it's a very, very low proportional percentage of activity that's underground. We know that it works there. And I've been very fortunate in having some great international support, where I've been actually able to tap in to some of the Sweden police officers that are currently involved in their program. And I've hosted them online with forums with members of parliament, so that they can really answer members of parliament's question about, well, you know, does this drive prostitution underground? That's one of the big arguments of those people that push, you know, full decriminalisation or legalisation, that it just drives it underground. And, you know, what these police officers in Sweden are saying, absolutely not. I mean, if a buyer can find them, then we can find them. So that's sort of, it's been great to have that support, both internationally and obviously, you know, domestically as well, from organisations like CATWA, the Coalition Against Trafficking of Women. So, I will be bringing it to a vote, soon. I'm looking to bring it to a vote within the next couple of months. So I think it's really important that at some stage you've got to have faith that the conversations that you've had in the background will be enough to carry it through.
Yeah. Well, I know certainly with the ones who have been pushing for the full decriminalisation, often will hold New Zealand up as the poster child for this is what can happen and this is working. But the number of conversations that I've had with people here that are working in that space, it's far from working. It's actually an absolute wild west of no regulation, very, very little oversight, and a very protective lobby group who, you know, got the legislation across, and they don't want to admit that their baby isn't working anymore. Whereas the Nordic model in this country, I think, would make a tremendous amount of difference. In terms of, you mentioned before, you know, in terms of drug and alcohol counselling, and one of the things, having spoken with Tony Pitt, who wrote a report for Family First called Is It Working? Co-wrote it. And also Rose Hunter, who was an Australian and a poet, and she wrote Body Shell Girl, beautiful book. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was cited is like economic reasons. It's, you know, I think in the United States, they surveyed 92% of people enter prostitution for economic reasons. But then along with it, once they get there, come all the mental health problems, come all the drug and alcohol issues. So it really is quite a big, if you're wanting to exit, help these women exit, it's having also that wraparound strategy from your Ministry of Health, isn't it, as well, to make sure that there is somewhere for these women to land in order to continue to move forward and exit.
Absolutely. You know, you've hit the nail on the head, Marie. I mean, these, you know, we cannot just have the legislation in place with it decriminalizing the seller or the women and criminalizing the man or the buyer. It's it is the most important. I always say this, the most important part of my bill is having those support structures, because, you know, we know that these women get into a cycle. And, you know, absolutely, it might start off for economic reasons, them going in, then they really do, you know, often it becomes, or they're dependent on a substance. And I think a lot of it, because it is very traumatic, you know, and that is a way for these women to be able to cope with that trauma, because, you know, that they still need that money coming in. And, you know, if there's no other way for them to be able to live, to survive, to eat, to try and, you know, get a roof over their head, or a bed somewhere, if there's no alternatives, then they just delve deeper and deeper into that substance abuse, you know, to try and as a way of, I think, coping, you know, with what the industry does to them. So, you know, for me, it's absolutely key that these women have these support structures, they have, you know, accommodation, they have the ability to be employed, they have the ability to undergo drug and alcohol support services, rehabilitation services. And it's really about, I think also about, it's important that they have some kind of mental health support as well. So, you know, I certainly know that in Sweden, you know, they have the social services and they have the police, but they also have a psychologist as well to really come in and to be able to speak with these women and listen. And I think that that is really, really key moving forward.
Mm, yeah, very, very much so. Well, good luck. Good luck on this, and we will definitely stay in touch and see how you get on. In terms of other things in South Australia, because South Australia and New Zealand are actually quite similar, you know, in terms of industry and, you know, you've got the mountains, you've got the ocean, you've got the vineyards, you've got the farmland. So, you know, I think Kiwis feel very, very home at home there, and Adelaide is beautiful. So what's not to love, of course?
It is.
Yeah, so how's everything been going in South Australia with the post-COVID hangover? I mean, you arrived in the middle of the silly season into the Legislative House. So how have things been? I mean, you had your Commission of Inquiry at the end of last year federally, and then, of course, The Voice was last year, which must have stung for the Prime Minister. So how have things been since COVID?
Yeah.
So sort of exiting out the other side.
Yeah, Marie, obviously, you know, you mentioned The Voice, and we had the federal referendum here at the end of last year. And I think, you know, initially when the Prime Minister put forward his view of sort of, you know, let's allow the Indigenous population, let's give them a voice. I think, you know, the vast majority of Australians, you know, supported that general statement. I mean, who wouldn't? But then, you know, we kept asking for the detail, you know, and what do you mean by this? You know,
the devil is always in the detail.
The devil is always in the detail, Marie. And he would not provide that detail. And so I think, you know, Australians started to wake up as to, well, what is this actually all about? You know, we had a very strong Liberal opposition, well, we do have a very strong Liberal federal opposition leader in Peter Dutton. And I think, you know, he did an exceptional job in saying to the people of Australia, you know what, it's okay to say no, because the Prime Minister really, you know, these are some pretty simple questions that the Australian public are asking of the Prime Minister in regards to, you know, how is this voice going to work? And what is the detail? And he's failing to provide the detail. And it's a big change to change the constitution. And therefore, you know, if that detail isn't going to be forthcoming, then it is okay to say no. And I think, you know, we saw that resoundingly, that Australians, you know, it's not as though every Australian wants practical outcomes for our Indigenous communities. We want to see better health in these communities. We want to see better education. You know, we want to ensure that our Indigenous communities are thriving. But that's not what this debate was about. And so, you know, we are really, the leader of the opposition, Peter Dutton, you know, has now sort of put on the table, look, we want to do an audit into the programs for the Indigenous community and make sure that the money that is being spent and allocated, money that's being allocated is being spent appropriately and getting to the communities where it's most needed. But unfortunately, you know, with the Labor government refused to do that. And, you know, here in South Australia, however, so in our state, we had 60 from memory, I think it's 64% of South Australians voted against that referendum. And South Australia was going to be the state. There's a lot of hype in the media leading up to that voice referendum that South Australia was going to be the state that won it for the Prime Minister. So we were actually the second highest no vote for that referendum around the nation.
Two for one, South Australians said no.
So. Yeah. Two for one, South Australians said no. And I fundamentally also believe that that's because we as a state Liberal opposition party came out as well and said it's okay to say no. You know, we believe in the value of, you know, one person, one vote. But not only that is that, you know, it potentially creates another layer of bureaucracy. And I've only been in this place for, you know, not quite 4 years yet. And what I can tell you, Marie, is that we do not need another layer of bureaucracy. If anything, that's not going to achieve practical outcomes for Indigenous communities. That is just going to continue to slow things down. But unfortunately, we've got a state Labor government and we've got Peter Malinauskas, our Premier, pushing a state voice, which is essentially a third chamber, a fourth layer of bureaucracy. And we've got the elections coming up in sort of, you know, the next 3 weeks for that state voice. You know, we'll be watching. We see the legislation passed last year. We'll be watching this very carefully. But my concern is that this will be another layer of bureaucracy that will not equal practical outcomes for Indigenous communities around our state.
There's a saying here amongst Māori dimmers, less hooey and more dooey, which is basically less sitting around and talking and more getting it done.
Absolutely.
And often what happens with these things is, yeah, it does, you're right, it does add a layer of complexity. Well, good luck with that. That'll be interesting. And in terms of the COVID stuff, like just in recent days, Queensland.
Yes.
The court ruling there around the mandates for health workers and also paramedics and nurses.
Yep, and health workers.
And we here have just had it, I think, Court of Appeal with the Defence Force was upheld. So there's certainly, has there been ripples now within the houses there, within politics, that actually maybe these mandates, regardless of what form they took, when you start breaching civil liberties and the Bill of Rights, in some cases, is not necessarily a good thing, even though you have all the best intentions in the world?
Yeah, and Marie, There is, I think, you know, starting to, there is some conversation that is certainly starting. I mean, look, the conversation's well and truly started out in the public arena, you know, and in fact, you know, when I was elected into the Legislative Council back in 2020, you know, some time after that, I actually spoke about, you know, my concern with mandates, you know, at creating kind of two classes of society. And I have real concerns about that. And, you know, I think in particular as well, the conversation needs to be had in our chambers in particular, because at the end of the day, our government, our state government, is screaming out for more nurses, more doctors, more paramedics, and they can't seem to get any. Well, you've got a whole population of extremely experienced, qualified nurses, doctors, and paramedics that cannot work at the moment because they haven't had their COVID vaccinations. You know, I think that we need to absolutely start that conversation as to, you know, I think we need to be pulling back and having a conversation in terms of, let's get these people back in the workforce. Let's ensure that they can do their jobs in saving lives, because that's what it's all about. I don't know too many people, to be honest, that are keeping up with the boosters. That's the reality of it. You know, I think even though the majority of the public who, you know, might have said, okay, might have got their first one or two vaccinations during those initial stages, you know, when it's getting to the sixth booster, a lot of them are thinking, well, really? Do we have to do it again and again and again? And, you know, I'm still getting COVID, so I'm not sure why, you know, how this is helping me. So, you know, I think that there's got to be a real conversation to be had around that.
Yeah. Well, our COVID inquiry submissions have just opened in the recent weeks. So, and just to remind everybody, exactly. And remember to everybody, if you need some help with that, covidinquiry.co.nz is the website to go to. It's where all that information is held. Well, look, there's some really interesting stuff. And just bear in mind, if you find anything that you think to yourself, is this something that we should be doing? Cast your eye across here, because believe me, we test out all sorts of weird and wonderful and wacky ideas, and not everything always comes off. So, you can always have a look.
Absolutely, I certainly will, Marie. And yeah, no, thank you for having me on the program here today. It's been wonderful chatting to you, and happy to chat at any time into the future. And hopefully, the next time we chat, you know, I can say to you,
it's good news.
It's good news. And we've got this bill through the Parliament. I'll certainly, like I said, I'm just working hard day and night to try and get this bill through, and so we can really give these women and these girls some hope.
Oh, no, look, good luck. This has been Nicola Centofanti, member of the member of the Upper House of South Australian Government. We'll go with that. That's much easier. Yeah, it's been great to talk to you this morning, and we will definitely stay in touch.
Thanks, Marie. Appreciate it. We'll speak soon.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom by simply visiting www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.